Greetings, everyone. I'm Declassified Dave, one third of the Hush Hush Society Conspiracy Hour podcast, and you're listening to Infinite Rabbit Hole.
On Thursday, December 9th, 1965, at approximately 4:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a huge fireball streaked a path through the early evening sky from Canada through Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania that left thousands of people questioning, what the hell was that? Only lasting about 5 to 10 minutes total, this fireball traveled from Canada to southwestern Pennsylvania at speeds of over 1,000 miles per hour. Witnesses from the ground claimed to hear a sonic boom as the object broke the sound barrier, and pilots told stories of the aftershock that they felt as it passed by. But what was the strangest thing of all wasn't the speed or the sound and vibrations it radiated, but rather that it apparently turned off of its southeastern heading, breaking dead east before turning to the south and then eventually shifting to the northeast before it completed its journey in southeastern Pennsylvania. That same day, Nevin and Nadine Kalp were playing outside as young siblings often do on a warmer than usual December day when they stopped mid-stride and stared at what they described as a falling star landing in the nearby woods. Frances Kalp, Nevin and Nadine's mother, grabbed the children and headed into the tree line to assist with anybody who might be hurt from what she thought was a plane crash. But before she entered the woods, she noticed a large pillar of black smoke building above the treetops as she thought better of her actions and headed home to call the authorities to help with a potential fire caused by the crash. The fire squad showed up at 6:30, and all the questions about what really happened that day began to surface. Well, here we are, everyone. Welcome to Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And welcome back to the Infinite Rabbit Hole. To the Infinite Rabbit Hole, everybody. I'm your host, Jeremy. Today, we're going to dive in to the Kecksburg UFO incident. But before we do that, let's go ahead and bring in our host, Jacob. What's going on, man? How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm being forced to grow a mustache against my will. That's about it. That's all that's going on with me. My leave ends today.
I think it looks good, man. I do. Oh. You're a pretty man.
I'm grateful. Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean it. Going to the next beautiful man with even more facial hair than all of us combined. Jeffrey.
You're welcome. Yeah, I think, Jake, you look really good with the mustache, bro. I really like it. It suits you. You have the right bone structure for a nice mustache.
All right. You ever have one of those awkward moments where someone's just like, hey man, I really like your hairstyle, and then they stop and they like expect you to say something nice back and you're like, thank you, and then that's it? You're like, well, I hate yours. No. I like your beard, Jeff. I'm a all or nothing kind of guy, and I can't grow a beard, so then it's nothing for me, right?
Well, I don't grow hair, so it's one or the other for me. So.
I mean, I'd lose every single hair follicle on my entire body if I could grow a gnarly, massive beard.
That's weird.
I would wish that. I'd be smooth like a baby seal.
All right. Now we're getting weird. <You're not smooth>.
Anyway.
And to bring in the last host, who provides nothing to this argument and conversation on beards and facial hair, Kenzar, how you doing?
I'm all right. Been a rough day, but I'm ready to dive into this.
So I recorded my garage and it's hot. It was 98 degrees here in Hampton Roads, Virginia.
Dang.
And this this garage is an oven, and I'm just sweating. It's horrible. It's uncomfortable, but that's okay.
I feel you, dude. It's 65 here. It's rough.
Oh, horrible.
Gosh.
Today we're going to talk about Kecksburg, and that makes it all worth it because this is a good one. I like the Kecksburg story, and this is something that even those who don't know too much about UFOs and the UFO culture and stories here in the U.S., this one is easily researchable, and you can head over to Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, and actually talk to people who were there that day. So it's not that old. There's still plenty of people that are willing to tell their story. The fire department has a big old UFO right outside of their station there, and they also sell goods and everything out of the gift shop for the Kecksburg UFO. So anybody who wants a good UFO story, especially one right here in the U.S., this is a great place to start. And speaking of starting, does anybody have anything to put out before we start?
Nada.
Did you say in the intro that it lasted 5 to 10 minutes or seconds?
5 to 10 minutes traveling from southern Canada all the way to Kecksburg, Pennsylvania.
Bro, that's like an eternity in time. Like, if you're watching something that you think is like a plane crashing or like a meteorite's about to strike Earth or something like that, 5 to 10 minutes, you're like, yeah, it wasn't very long. It's like, dude, that's forever.
No, Jake, like the first reports of it started coming in, and then the last reports. So the first reports in Canada, and then the last reports in Pennsylvania, southwestern Pennsylvania, came in 10 minutes afterwards. So it's streaked across the sky.
Oh, okay.
People in 7 different states. I'm getting into information that I'll talk about eventually, but this was it was going so fast it broke the sound barrier. So the sound barrier is
again, it's just coasting across the sky, and you're like, yeah, it wasn't very long, and people are like, oh yeah, it's there. It's moving.
So the sound barrier actually breaks at 770 miles per hour. So this thing was estimated to be going well over 1,000. This thing cracked windows and, sent vibrations through the air and through the ground. Anyways, enough of just freestyling it. Let's get into the actual story. The witnesses piled up that day. Randy Overly, a local boy, described seeing a brownish object on fire as it soared over his head at about 200 feet in the air before it crashed into the woods roughly 2 miles away from where he was standing. Two brothers, Rob and Randy Lay, claimed to see the object, which they were unfamiliar with, snap the top off of trees as it entered the woods before it landed. Mabel Meza, the receptionist at WHJB radio station in Greensburg, took calls from an unknown number of people claiming to see this object tear through the sky. John Murphy, from the same radio station, also took calls, which he thought were pranks until the station received more stern voices on the other end of the line claiming to be from the U.S. Army, Air Force, and even the Pentagon. At this point, he decided maybe this was in fact the story of the year, and he packed up and headed out to the woods by the Kalp House in Kecksburg. When Mr. Murphy arrived, the first witnesses he conducted interviews were the Kalp siblings and their mother, Frances. The time was 7:20 p.m. when Murphy, Officer Carl Metz of the Pennsylvania Police from Greensburg, and a few others entered the woods. John Murphy was full of questions as to what they were looking for and began recording what he was seeing and taking pictures of the site. But all Officer Metz would tell him was that he was going to have to ask the military if they took over this investigation, as that is who he was going to hand it over to. So Murphy headed back to the police station in Greensburg to talk to someone of higher authority to get some answers, but that would prove to be harder than he thought. Later that night, John Murphy, more local authorities, and a large group of military men from the army traveled back to the area to continue the investigation. Only this time, Murphy was not allowed past the tree line. This was only the beginning of the military's presence in Kecksburg that night. The Kecksburg Fire Department was turned into the base of operations for the U.S. Army for the duration of their investigation. This included the presence of guards, heavy vehicles, and armed soldiers flooding into Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. So what do you guys think so far?
Swamp gases.
From Venus, right?
I was going to say banshees. I was going to say it's the banshees again. sounds like your average UFO crash or sighting so far.
That's pretty much, yeah. I mean, this is Americana when it comes to UFO stories, right? Thing crashes in the woods, and then all of a sudden there's military men telling you you can't go in the woods. So let's move on then. It gets really good, guys. You ready?
Ready.
Firefighters from neighboring towns were called in to help assist the Kecksburg Fire Department in locating the object that burned through the sky that late afternoon. James Mays of Kecksburg Fire Department is believed to be the first person to lay eyes on the location of the object from a nearby hill off of Coon Lane that overlooked the forest below. From his point, he claimed to be able to see what looked like smoke and arcing blue light a short distance away. 18 years old, James Romansky from nearby Lloydsville Fire Department was also at the scene when he got a call on his walkie that someone had found something. As he approached the area that was announced, he joined a growing group of firefighters that were all staring at a 10 to 15 foot long, 8 to 12 feet in diameter metallic acorn-shaped object that was partially buried in the ground. The area was a mess, and there was a clear path of broken trees and limbs and even a trench left as the object came to its current location. Romansky described the craft as being dark gold or bronze, had no wings, no doors, no windows, no obvious form of propulsion, and the object lacked any seams. The base of the object was encircled with what looked like hieroglyphs of some form. It was about 15 minutes later when a group of men showed up with the Geiger counters and told the firefighters to head out of the woods and that the scene would be secure under the investigation by the U.S. Army and Air Force from now on. So Romansky and all of the other firefighters headed back to Kecksburg Fire Department, where they were surprised to find that the firehouse was now under the control of the same entity claiming to be the U.S. military that took control of the scene in the woods. James Romansky hung out outside of the firehouse for a little while with a few other firefighters before the group headed back to the fringe of the woods, where there were hundreds of onlookers, military personnel, and reporters. The highlight of the night was when a large army truck came out of the woods near the crowd with something large on it and hauled it away. All right, guys.
I have a theory already, but I don't know if I should say what I'm thinking or if I should wait to see if you have more info on this, but I have developed a theory already.
I 100% know what this is.
Do you?
Yes.
Let's play the guessing game. What do you think it is? I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
Mine starts with an N.
So does mine.
And then the second word is a B.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, we'll get into it, but the description's there, the hieroglyphs on the side, like, it's just, there's no way this couldn't be that.
We do get into this. All right, just hang tight. Let's hit fast forward. Let's go through the next section real quick. This could be a quick episode. Many people came forward in the following days, weeks, months, and years with their own stories of that night. And through these firsthand reports, a story was written that included threatening postures from men in military uniforms, strange blue lights in the woods, and a truck that was impossible to keep out of the public's eyes. 15-year-old Robert Blystone remembers seeing a crowd of military men at the Kecksburg Fire Department that night. Linda Foschia, remembers that the presence of police, firefighters, and members of the military seemed to be everywhere that night. She even claims to have seen a small convoy of military trucks with men in the back driving through Greensburg to get to Kecksburg. 19-year-old Larry Snyder and two other friends attempted to enter the woods off of Coon Road to investigate what all of the fuss was about. They were surprised when men dressed in army fatigues met them at the tree line and told them that the woods were off limits to the public. When Larry asked why, they told him that a meteor crashed into the woods and that their group was in charge of removing it safely for the public. Larry Snyder and his friend drove off to try to enter the woods in a different location, a decent distance away, but they were denied access at this point as well. After the second denial, Larry and his friends gave up for the night. Bill Weaver claims to have evaded the men guarding the perimeter of the woods that night. Well, mostly. He drove up Coon Road and snuck past the military men while they were talking with others from the small crowd of people gathered in that location. He walked up a hill in the woods that overlooked the trees below and noticed an area that was shining blue lights. Weaver then shined his portable spotlight on the area to get a better look. As Weaver noticed men in white coveralls near the location of the blue lights, he was spotted by a guard and told to leave before he was detained and his car confiscated. Bill would enter the woods again that night, this time from another location, and would actually make it to the object's crash site. He described seeing smoke or steam coming off of the object and a smell of burning sulfur. Weaver snuck out of the woods again without being spotted as he heard voices getting closer to the location. Robert Bittner, a firefighter from another town, approached the woods where a large 6x6 covered truck was being slowly driven into the forest, accompanied by a group of soldiers. As Bittner and his crew approached the tree line, they were stopped by men who told them that they were not needed and that they could head back to the Kecksburg Fire Department for more information. A man from Pittsburgh by the name of Jerry Betters drove out to Kecksburg that night to do his own amateur investigation of the mysterious flaming object being talked about all over the radio. As he approached the group gathering on Coon Road, he was told to turn around and that everything was under control. As he was heading back, he witnessed a large military truck with a white star painted on the side coming out of the woods from another location with something in the back, but he was unable to see exactly what it was due to a tarp covering the object. Most of these personal stories from civilians in the area were confirmed when a large green army truck was spotted by the masses being escorted through town by jeeps with red flashing lights. Something was in the bed of the truck, and everyone had their opinions as to what it was. But there was one thing that almost everyone agreed on, and that whatever it was not a meteor. Any thoughts or opinions yet? We're 20 minutes in, you guys haven't said a word.
Well, I mean, obviously this thing wasn't a meteor, right? Unless it was cracked open and aliens were crawling out of it, there wouldn't be this crazy military presence. Like,
right.
That's what I was thinking. I don't necessarily know how dangerous a meteorite could be, but I don't see there having to be that kind of a military presence for that at all.
Unless it was like the meteor from like that movie Evolution, right?
It was definitely not a meteor for multiple reasons, one of which I'll say, and you guys will think that I'm crazy, but space is fake, so...
Well, that's one
of course. Of course.
Definitely.
Hashtag technology. New t-shirt.
Hashtag new tea. It's definitely technology, and I am ready to just... I'm like biting my tongue at what I want to say, but I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to ruin the episode.
This is going to be one of those episodes where all the information is going to be regurgitated in like 30 minutes, and then the rest of the episode is just going to be us BSing and bouncing information off of each other.
Well, I mean, but that's how people learn, right?
I guess.
Yeah,
that's fine, bro. You know, sometimes that's how it goes.
In the 1990s, Clifford E. Stone claimed to have seen a document that told of an object from unknown origins that was removed from the woods in Kecksburg in December 1965. Stone was an officer in the military at the time of the incident and claimed to have seen this top-secret document during his service. Well, that's pretty much all I have on Clifford E. Stone. I did try to look up more information on him. Unfortunately, couldn't find much about him. But this name popped up in a couple of my sources, so I said, screw it, let's do it. Maybe Clifford Easton is somebody that I'm supposed to know who he is, but I don't. So that's that. So we'll move on. On the night that the fireball crashed into the woods in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, a scent of burning sulfur filled the air around the Hayes house. Both Lillian and her husband Don and their two sons were home when there was a knock on their door hours after the event took place. Men in both military uniforms and civilian clothes were on their doorstep asking to use their phone. Lillian claims that she was unable to hear most of the conversations that the men were having between themselves or on the house's phone, but she does claim that on one of the calls, a man clearly stated the word NASA. Later that evening, another group of men appeared at her house again, asking to use the phone. This time, they were wearing uniforms with NASA's insignia on it. Of course, she claimed, as she was concerned as to what was actually happening. But she also said that what really upset her was that her phone bill was going to be incredibly high this month because of all the long-distance phone calls being made from her house that night. Years later, one of her sons, John Hayes, told his side of the story from last night, or from that night. John and his brother were upstairs in their room as they would be out of the way of all the people coming in and out of their house that night. Through his window, John saw many men in military fatigues, and later on in the evening, a group of men in all white coveralls walked into the woods by their house, followed closely by a large truck. An hour later, the truck came out of the woods with something as big as a Volkswagen Beetle in its bed, covered by a tarp. By the time the truck was fully out of the woods, there was a convoy of military jeeps with flashing red lights waiting to guide it away from his family's property. Soon after the jeeps and the large truck left the area, everyone else that was inside their house also left. The following day, John and his brother went into the woods to see what they could find. As they approached the area where the truck went in and out of, they found the fence cut and peeled back to one side. As the boys got farther into the tree line, they began to see that there were tops of the trees broken off and some trees completely broken in half. Some places were burned and a sour smell filled the air. They followed the path of destruction to an area where a trench seemed to be dug into the ground that got deeper as they followed it until it just stopped at a spot where whatever made it must have rested. The ground was burned, and the boys watched as a person in a white suit was testing the area with what John found out later was a Geiger counter. The man yelled at the boys to go home, and that if they stayed around, they could get really sick from the radiation in this area. So the boys ran home and told their mother what they saw and what the man said about the radiation.
This should just be a, you know, with... So this is a pretty much a cookie cutter sort of situation, right? Something mm-hmm. crashes, the government comes in, they smuggle it away, they block off the area. Whether or not there is radiation in that area, it would be a great way to deter people by saying, hey, if you come into this area, the radiation's going to get you. It could be, could not be, right? It could just be a right. scare tactic. But this is like a cookie cutter, like every single time something like this happens, it's just... This is the exact same procedure. So this should let everyone know. I'm not saying to do anything illegal, but if you have a piece of property and something falls out of the sky and slams into the ground on your property, run over to it and take as many pictures as you can and then run away and then call the authorities and be like, I don't know what happened. And then leak those things, right? Because no one will ever see or hear from it again. once the alphabet soup comes in to investigate.
I was going to say, that's how you get suicided, dude.
Look, I'm not saying to like go and break into a spot or like, you know, go onto someone else's property or anything like that. I'm just saying that like, you know, if this happens to you on your land, go check it out first, you know. If nothing else, you become a millionaire for a little bit, you know, of selling all those pictures before you get suicided. Or, yeah, or the radiation gets you or the aliens, I don't know. But just like, because this is, you know, everyone wants answers, but, you know, once various government name the organization gets a hold of something like this, it's all, you know, swept away. It's covered up by a tarp. You never hear about it again, at least, you know, other than rumors and hearsay. And it's just like, you know, the answers are never going to come unless people are more willing to just like, you know, oh my gosh, something happened, instead of saying, let's call the police. I don't go check it out and then call the police, you know. Maybe the aliens kill you. I don't know, but.
You don't know if you don't try.
That's right.
Jeff, Kenzar, anything?
Go ahead, Kenzar.
Jeff's, I got nothing.
I'm actually looking something up as well, because I want to make sure that when I open my mouth, I know what I'm talking about.
he's going to give legal advice. He's like, well, as someone who's an amateur lawyer.
Lawyer. Jeff,
someone who knows
lawyer.
That personal space as well as other spaces are fake.
Okay. All the spaces are fake.
All right. Moving on. Bill Buellbusch was from Mammoth, Pennsylvania. He was 40 years old that night and was working on his Chevy when he noticed a loud sizzling sound coming from overhead. When he looked up, he noticed that something was on fire as it flew over his property on a path from nearby Norvelt to Laurelville. Buellbusch walked up the road and tried to get a better view of what the thing was. Then it took a hard turn towards Kecksburg before disappearing over the woods in that area. This left him curious because if it was just a meteor, it wouldn't have been able to turn in such a fashion, or if at all. This led him to believe that whatever it was being controlled or flown by someone. Bill then jumped into his car and took off for Coon Road to see if he could see the thing again from the top of the now famous hill. As he approached the crest of the hill, he saw what looked like smoke coming from the woods below and a bright blue arcing light flashing around the same area. Buellbusch claimed it looked like a light given off by a welding torch. Bill was very familiar with these woods and began his descent down the other side of the hill to get a better look at whatever it was. He walked about a quarter of a mile, guided only by his flashlight, before he came upon the thing that had crashed into the woods. The object was about 10-12 feet long, a bronze-like color, and was half buried at the end of the trench it created as it crash-landed. Trees in the area were broken or had limbs snapped off of them, and the smell of sulfur was extremely pungent the closer he got to the object. Soon, after arriving at the object, he heard someone approaching the area and snuck out of the forest and made it back to his car without being seen or confronted by anyone. When Bill got home, the first thing he did was tell his wife Betty what he saw. Betty was not amused and just continued to watch her TV. So Bill grabbed his son and headed back out to Kecksburg to show him what he had seen. When he got to the location on Coon Road that he had previously entered the woods at, there was a growing crowd of people forming and armed military men refusing to let anyone into woods. So Bill and his son went back home. Bill Buellbusch is believed to be the first person on the scene of the crash and the first person to lay eyes on this mysterious object that was traveling at incredible speeds throughout the sky and controlling its heading, all while being burned to a crisp before crash landing in the middle of a small town of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, on December 9th, 1965. The Pennsylvania State Police released a statement soon after claiming that nothing was found in the woods, and other news sources claimed that it was a meteor that fell from the sky. This obviously didn't sit well with some others, and whispers of a government cover-up was being spread through the area. Then the newspaper headlines began to hit the market. George Dudding has an impressive list of these headlines in his book, The Kecksburg UFO Incident, which I used heavily for my research, by the way. December 10th, 1965, the Tribune Review from Greensburg read, Army ropes off area, unidentified flying object falls near Kecksburg. On the same day, the City edition of the same newspaper had a headline that read, Searchers failed to find object. The December 16th version of the Tribune Review's headline read, Army cordons off area, unidentified flying object lands in Kecksburg, search goes into the night. The December 27th edition of the Cumberland Chronicle has a headline that read, "Kecksburg Incident Fireball was a meteor." And on January 2nd, 1966, the Rockwood Review's headline read, "Air Force declares meteor over Kecksburg."
Question. Mm-hmm. Is there any official reports of this? Like, is there any, like, government documentation about this? Or is this...
We're going to get to that.
Lore?
Okay. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
I will hold off.
Oh, this definitely happened. Whatever this was,
blow your
happened.
Roll there, Jeff.
Well, I guess I'll just wait till you say those things before, because I don't want to ruin what you might have in the presentation, but I found something else as well. So,
well, I mean, whether you say it or not, I'm just going to say it again.
So NASA,
mm-hmm.
Talking about this, you get into that?
So I read a little bit about it, but I don't think I included it on this.
So I'll just tell you what I read was that, mm-hmm. NASA released a statement in 2005 reporting that experts had examined fragments from the area and determined they were from a Soviet satellite, but that the records of their findings were lost in 1987.
Okay.
NASA seems to have a big problem with losing stuff.
All right, slow down.
You told me to say it.
Jeff, shut your face.
Yeah, you said, Jeremy.
Slow control, man.
I did. You're right.
See, look. All right, Bill had the right idea. Everyone be like Bill, but go in there with your camera on your phone. Everyone has a cell phone in their pocket these days, or at least most people do. Get in there and just spray it down with pictures and videos and then run away and be like, oh, someone's coming, you know?
1965. Should have just whipped out a cell phone.
Well, obviously not then, but now, right?
I know what you're talking about. All right, you guys ready to move on?
Like, I'm the idiot.
Move on? Are you ready to move on? Let's talk about where it is now. The path that the now famous truck took once it left the Kecksburg area was fairly easy for many people to piece together. Some sources claim that the truck went directly to the Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio. Then from Lockbourne, it was apparently witnessed by multiple sources entering onto Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. According to George Dudding, an unnamed man was working security detail that night and was in charge of guarding the craft during its stop at the Lockbourne Air Force Base. In the early 90s, two men who were only identified by the names of Myron and J.S. claimed to have seen the acorn-shaped object on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base when they were delivering a special order of bricks to the facility. The two men delivered multiple loads of bricks to this particular location on Wright-Patterson, and during one of their deliveries, they noticed a large bronze acorn-shaped object sitting on the bed of a large truck. The next time, the men showed for another delivery. The object was removed from the truck, but the truck was still there. The men were curious as to what happened with the acorn-shaped object, so they went up to a window of the building that they had heard grinding coming from and saw the thing surrounded by scaffolding and men attempting to cut it with grinders and plasma torches. As the men were getting back into their truck, they saw a man exit the building and asked him what that thing was. The man said that he didn't really know and that these bricks were going to be used to build a room around that thing in case the object was radioactive and opening it caused the radiation to seep out. Myron also went on record to say that by the object, there was a gurney with a sheet covering a body. On the side closest to him, there was an unhuman hand hanging out from under the sheet. As the men were talking to the guy who came outside, they were approached by security and told to leave immediately. There's some cliche in there, huh?
Okay, obviously, I believe that he saw the thing, right? I believe that they delivered the bricks and stuff, and I'm glad you got into it, because I was going to say, you know, the good thing about bricks is you can stack them on top of each other to conceal stuff. But adding the hand and then the gurney and the dead body, right? It's just sitting out there in the warehouse with them. They're just letting it stink up the place, right? After days of it just sitting there.
Sounds very theatric.
Yeah, that's
like
the fluff,
like a movie
right?
scene.
Yeah, I seen this account pop up Like I said, I got most of my research through George Dudding's book. But there was a couple other sources that I use as well, which will all be in the sources section of this episode description, where they had mentioned this. And it's just, it reeks someone spitting BS.
Yeah.
It smells like shit. It really does.
It smells like a rotting corpse in a hangar bay.
It does.
Just hanging out there with him, grinding away next to this corpse. Okay.
We're worried about the radiation, but the sheet is going to protect us.
Right.
Such bullshit. But anyways,
they're trying to cut into it, even though that obviously this body was ejected out of it somehow, but there's no way to inside of it. They have to cut into it. Yeah. There's the fluff that's added to the story to make it sound more crazy.
Oh man. I had to add it just because I knew we would have a good time tearing this one apart. Kid, Jeffrey, anything?
I'm triggered.
Very well. All right.
I got nothing.
Okay. Earlier, we briefly mentioned John Murphy, the reporter from WHJB in Greensburg that was supposedly the first reporter on the scene. The following few weeks after the event in Kecksburg were spent in interviewing witnesses for John. During that time, he prepared a document called The Object in the Woods that was supposed to be played, a documentary called The Object in the Woods that was supposed to be played on the air about a month and a half after the event. But the day before the air date, two men dressed in all black approached John and claimed to be authorities from the government. The men went into John's office, and when John came out, he announced that he was going to be releasing an edited version of the documentary instead of the original. Very soon after his announcement, John received many visits and phone calls from witnesses in his documentary saying that they were withdrawing their stories from his documentary because they did not want to get in trouble with the government. Another employee of the radio station that we briefly mentioned earlier, Linda Foschia, claimed that awkward men from the government came into the studio that same day and took typewritten materials, photographs, and recordings of their on-air conversations and interviews and left. Linda was one of the few people who saw the first and original adaptation of John Murphy's Object in the Woods, and she claims that the one that was released for public consumption after the men's visit had nothing in common with the original, nor did the new one even mention an object found in the woods. Mabel Meza was another employee of the same radio station who was mentioned briefly earlier, and she claims to have seen the photos that the men took shortly after Murphy had them developed and said that they were kind of dark, but you can see that there was definitely a bell-shaped object lodged into the earth. John Murphy died in 1969, about 4 years after the incident in Kecksburg, by a hit and run while he was on vacation in California. His ex-wife, Bonnie Milslagle, believed that this was a targeted attack on John because he knew too much about what had happened and had an issue with keeping quiet. She came forward about the inconsistencies in the investigation onto his death and a message that he had told her on a CB radio call after the crash. He told her that the authorities confiscated the film he had used to record the incident, but there was still one left. Bonnie never knew where that film was and never saw it, but she believes that someone knew he had it and that someone may have gotten a little nervous that John would release it to the public. So what do you guys think about that?
He should have taken one for the team and released it to the public.
So there was a lot. Now, everything that we've talked about so far, except for the dipshits who saw the body next to the thing in Wright-Patterson. Yeah. Do I believe it was at Wright-Patterson? Yeah, probably. I mean, that's probably where they go, right? If it's in that part of the country, I mean, that's the eastern Area 51, pretty much, right? It's just not as secretive. Everything else, I'm talking about from people with sightings of this thing to people seeing the truck come out to people trying to get in the woods, people seeing this happen to the reporter and all of the stuff getting taken with these people in black suits, there are literally countless amount of people who witnessed this. I only included a handful of them. I included the ones from the actual station that worked mm-hmm. with the guy, not the people that were just happened to be in there because they were going to be on the radio that day, or the people outside the radio station or whatever. There, this happened. Like, this dude got threatened, had his shit stolen, and was told to shut up. And then there was also reports that this guy, John Murphy, had an issue with money. He was trying mm-hmm. to sell this thing. He was trying to make money off of it. I mean, he's a reporter, right?
Right.
He was trying to sell this tape to the highest bidder, and people who witnessed the crash or the hit and run say that the guy who went to or hit John and killed him in California purposely hit him and took off. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely some sketchy things here, and I do believe that this was an actual thing that happened, simply due to the amount of witnesses that witnessed.
Yeah, I mean,
or these events. Crickets.
You're freezing up on us.
Yeah, you just got suicided.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's gonna be clean whenever we edit it, so we're good.
I'd like to say that these days it's less likely for that sort of stuff to happen, but I don't truly believe that, right? It's just, I think that unfortunately, I know I just said that, you know, if something crazy happens, you should go and take a bunch of pictures of it and stuff and then release it. But like, if you see something crazy like that, you're already dead. It's just a matter of time. So you might as well just release all that stuff to the public so that everyone can see it. And then, you know, and then people will be more, you know, more sure of the reason why you were suicided versus, you know, oh, well, I had heard that he had something that, you know, they didn't want released. Now release all of it.
Because
it doesn't matter anyway.
Don't get suicided in vain, basically. Yeah. Like, yeah. Make it worth your while.
Pretty much.
I mean, I agree, man. I totally think that something happened. Right. This isn't one of the situations where I usually take the stance of nothing happened and it's all woo and
right,
whatever. Right. Like, I totally think that something happened. All these people definitely saw something. And then, like you were saying, the fact that let's just call them the men in black because that's fun. The mm-hmm. men in black mm-hmm. are all over this, you know, like, yeah, something for sure happened. So, and I think we all know what it is. So I'm ready. I'm ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
We have to wait, I think.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Kenzar?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, let's keep going. Here's the part everyone's waiting for. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. You guys are going to all say it one more time before I move on. Hey, everybody. Bear with us while we take this quick break.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
All right. The information about what really happened was a little hazy at best at times. The first reports came out saying that there was an object that fell out of the sky and crashed into the woods in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. But soon after, the official report stated that there was nothing found at the scene and that it was most likely a meteor that had burned completely up in our atmosphere. Then the military released their statement saying that there was a meteoroid that crashed into the Kecksburg woods and was never recovered. All of these different stories came out in less than a few weeks' time, and you can see why so many people were confused as to what the real story was. especially those that witness the object burning through the sky at treetop level and changing directions at will. One very popular theory as to what really happened that day is that this fireball in the sky was the Cosmos 96 Soviet Union Venus space probe. On November 23, 1965, Cosmos 96 was launched from Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, which at the time was leased to Russia. Its mission was to do a close flyby of the planet Venus and explore the Venusian landscape. But things went really bad at the launch, and the Cosmos 96 was stuck in low Earth orbit until December 9, 1965, the same day as the Keksberg incident, and just 16 days later when it crashed landed back to the Earth. There are a few inconsistent reports as to where Cosmos 96 crashed into the Earth. Most commonly, the word is that it crash landed in Canada, and a few others claim that it was in Lake Erie. But some believe that this would have been a really good explanation as to what actually crashed in Keksberg. This makes a lot of sense in some way, as the Cosmos 96 probe did have the ability to change course in flight. This was a feature built into the probe in order to navigate the Venusian surface and atmosphere. The radiation that many claim was present at the site would have been from the buildup of radiation that exists on all items in low Earth orbit, and the quote-unquote acorn shape of the object was said to be a rough description of what the Cosmos 96 was shaped like. This would have had our military very active at the site of the crash. They would have wanted to get their hands on any Soviet technology in 1965, only 10 years after the start of the famous space race between Russia and the U.S., officially announced on August 2, 1955. Another thing to remember was that in 1962, there was a United Nations peace treaty signed that would have forced the U.S. to hand over the craft back to the Soviets if word were to get out that they recovered the Cosmos 96, hence why they would have been so secretive about the recovery efforts. But one thing that does not add up for this theory is that the most common story told about the Cosmos 96 Venus space probe crash landed in Canada at 3:30 a.m. on that day, and the Keksberg object didn't crash into the forest until roughly 4:45 p.m. that afternoon. But of course, there is an argument about this as well. Some say that what landed in Canada was the rocket booster that was jettisoned by the probe upon re-entry into the atmosphere, and that the craft itself had crashed in Keksberg. But the theories don't stop here, as another popular opinion is that the craft that crashed into the woods in Keksberg, Pennsylvania, was in fact a Nazi Bell, known as Die Glock. To take a very quick look at the technology theorized to be a part of the Nazi Bell program, as a deeper dive would take an entire episode, if not longer, the Nazi Bell was thought to be a piece of machinery in production by Nazi Germany during World War II. Purple-colored radioactive fluid was thought to be used as a way to affect the fabric of space and time. This strange manned craft was theorized to be able to freeze time and allow specific parties to travel physical distances without traveling through time, as well as being used as a time travel device and flying device. How the craft would have ended up in Keksberg in 1965 from 1940s Germany would have been a mistake in their calculations or technology that caused the craft to tear through space and time during a trial run and burn up over Ontario, Canada, and seen from 9 U.S. states before landing in Keksberg, Pennsylvania, in what the occupants would have perceived as only a few minutes of time. This may not be science fiction, as it was very well known that Nazi Germany was in fact very interested in this kind of technology and occult practices. All right, boys, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jake. I'll let you start.
All right, so that's kind of a reach, right? That it traveled through space and time and all that sort of stuff. This was something that was brought up during the Rendlesham UFO incident, right? Mm-hmm. That the location of that base, you know, from Germany post-World War II after we seized up all these scientists through Operation Paperclip to the United States, and then our allies, England being one of them, snatched up a few of their own as well, that there could have been these recovered Nazi bells that they were testing out in Rendlesham, so that way when there was this UFO sighting and all these things happened, and everyone was all hush-hush about it, and then people were told to shut their mouths, that it was nothing and don't worry about it. Same exact thing. This could have been another captured, you know, Nazi bell or a remake of it, trying to figure out how this thing works, how it operates. They get it up into the sky, and then something goes horribly wrong, and they just start spiraling towards the Earth, right? Just like a fireball, and it's crash landing this thing. I don't think that it's as far as like, oh, they made it work and then they traveled forward in time and all that sort of stuff. I think that this was just another, you know, the reason why people saw bell shapes was because that's the original design. And then as technology improves over the years, we see these, you know, house size computers getting smaller and smaller and smaller until they're fitting in our phones. And now they're in little RFID chips and all kinds of things. Everything's getting smaller, so why couldn't these UFOs or UAPs go from these big giant shapes and then flatten out, right? Now we have the TR-3B and all kinds of stuff, because it doesn't have to be as big anymore, right? Everything's getting smaller because we're figuring out better ways to do it. So I think that this was just one of the first prototypes that the U.S. military is probably experimenting with, or one of the first, and something went horribly wrong. And of course, they run in there right off the bat to snatch it up because, you know, in some ways I can say, you know, oh, how could the government think that it's going to fall into the wrong hands? But then, I kind of get it. You know, how long was the F-35 in production before they announced, hey, we have a new jet called the F-35, right? We have to do high speed trials. We have to do weapons testing. We have to do all kinds of things to it. I don't know, 15 years? Right? How long were they making that thing? So I can see two sides of that, but I can also see if this, you know, Germany was so advanced, they had their V2 rocket program, they were just really paving the way, and then we stole their scientists. Why wouldn't the U.S. government try to exploit that, try to make their own versions of it? And, you know, of course things go wrong. And this was just one of those occurrences. Jeff.
So I totally agree with you, except I have a slightly different thought about this.
Because
so
space is fake, yeah.
Well, okay. not exactly. But so a lot of people don't know this. I'm sure everybody here knows this, but somebody listening might not. The Soviets actually had their own program at the same time that we were doing Operation Paperclip, okay? And so they took a bunch of Nazi scientists too. Okay, to the USSR. So what I think is that the Soviets actually were building these Nazi bells, but now they're Soviet bells, right? Because mm-hmm. they had all these scientists. So I don't think necessarily it had to have been a captured one, because they have a bunch of the scientists. So I think that they built newer ones in USSR. But the thing is that the Nazi bell had what was reported as teleportation abilities as well, not just time travel.
Mm-hmm.
So is it possible that the Soviets were testing teleportation with their version of the bell, and it just happened to teleport on the other side of the Earth?
So, right? So real quick. Mm. So when I was doing the research, right, and I've looked into the Nazi bell quite a bit, right? But the particular research that I was doing was in reaction to what George Dudding had in his book about the fluid and the ability to stop time. So it, from what I was reading, and again, we're going to have to do a bigger, deeper dive into the Nazi bell, because it's definitely something we're going to have to break into now that we've done Rendlesham and Kecksburg, mm-hmm. right? We have to do it eventually. But apparently it wasn't necessarily so much as a teleporter as it was perceived as teleporting, because it was stopping time and physically moving throughout the three dimensions without the effect of the fourth. So just like in any fantasy movie where someone's able, what was the movie, Click, right? With I don't remember.
Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Adam Sandler, thank you. Where he paused it and he was able to move and everything and he can press play again, right? It was something similar to that where it was perceived as teleportation. But what was really happening was that it was literally stopping the fourth dimension time and moving throughout the first three dimensions without being affected by the fourth.
So that's interesting, but I think that that's a psyop, to be honest with you. I think that in all of these secret programs, they will leak out information that is way more advanced than what the truth is of the situation. So if they had the ability to stop time, like literally stop time, dude, just imagine the possibilities, right? So of course they want to put that out to make everybody else think that they've got the ability to stop time.
Fuck, when in scare reality, tactics, they, bro.
Right. Yeah. You know, so I think that it was teleporting.
Right.
Literally teleporting and not stopping time.
And but, that would be slightly less devastating to your psyche. And that was like the first thing that came to my mind too. Same thing is like that most likely was not manipulating time due to the simple fact that that war, if they had that technology, that war would have ended completely fucking differently. Now, just teleporting, right, without, you know, where it's more or less manipulating the first three dimensions with the effect of the fourth, right, just flip-flopping what I was saying, that would be much more defendable, right? Not, it wouldn't still be very easily defendable, but imagine literally trying to defend something that was moving without the effects of time, right? This, and then flip it to something where, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm talking more modern technology and everything, but you can put movement sensors and stuff, right? And as soon as something popped up, boom, they're locked in. But either way, we'll have to dive into the Nazi bell later on. But
I like
do you guys
that theory.
What's
I
that?
Like that theory. It's like the symbols on the side, like some backwoods people, they're like they were some sort of hieroglyphs on the side. It's just Russian. It's just Russian around the outside of it. Like some sort of hieroglyphs, you know.
So Kenzar, would you like to speak on this? Since Kenzar has been going live on Instagram lately. And we had a brief conversation about Kexburg with some of the fans. You're muted.
Sorry, guys.
Good job, kid. Sorry.
It's been a long day. Yes, we had a listener join us on Instagram Live. He was from, I can't remember where he said he was from.
But they use the same alphabet.
But yeah, they use the same alphabet out there. And he was trying to explain their alphabet, like the letter B is actually the letter, what looks like the letter B is actually our letter V. And yeah, then you've got all these extra strange looking shapes that you're unfamiliar with. Of course you're going to think it's pictographs or hieroglyphs or whatever, right? So it's very interesting. I actually had no idea how that alphabet worked. He gave me a little bit of insight.
Cyrillic alphabet.
You know, the first thing he asked me was there anybody that recognized any symbols? And I was like, as far as I know, no. And he goes, then it wasn't Russian. Because you, as an American, would have looked at it and recognized the letter B, right? It was V to them, but B to us. And we would have said there was a B on the side or a C because their alphabet is very, very similar to ours, right? Because that was my first idea is actually I took a whole section out of this because I was like, I thought it was just some people from backwoods Pennsylvania that saw Russian on the side and thought it was hieroglyphs, just like Jeff, Jake was saying. And and then he said that and I was like, dude, yes. I was like, now I have to rewrite that. And I was like, you know what? Instead, I just deleted it because I knew it was going to come up in conversation. And I just want to give him a shout out. Forgive me, brother. I can't remember your name, but he is the host of the Tracing Owls and was it Darwin's Misfits, right?
I think his name was Vuk. V-U-K, I think, is what he said.
But he is, Darwin's Deviation. Sorry, not Darwin's Misfits. But Tracing Owls and Darwin's Deviations podcast. He chats with us all the time on Instagram. I just want to give him a shout out as an official source for this show, because he was definitely able to lend some information that crossed off a Russian print on the side of the Kecksburg acorn.
All right, then.
And if Chinese, I got your name wrong, dude.
I don't know.
If I got your name wrong, dude, I'm sorry. I'm terrible with names.
Tell her what it is so that we can make her apologize.
So I can correct myself and apologize in the most Canadian way possible for you.
Send you a bottle of syrup.
Exactly, yes.
So basically, all right, Backwoods, Pennsylvania, 1965, it was Chinese, and they're like hieroglyphs. That's all I can remember.
So I got two things
on
this real quick. So one, it probably was symbols or hieroglyphs of some kind, just because, not to get into it too deep, but yes, like you said, the Nazis were into like a whole bunch of occult stuff. Mm-hmm. And I personally believe
been runes.
That, yeah, I personally believe that they put certain symbols, I'm not going to use the word hieroglyphs because symbols is probably more accurate. Mm. Yep. They were putting symbols on the Nazi bell for specific reasons, for energy reasons of some kind, right? To manipulate the dimensions and stuff, right? Mm. So I think that if the USSR was building their own Nazi bell with Nazi scientists, they would also be putting the same symbols that would conjure some sort of energy to make the thing work. The second thing is, you know, they always will try to mask an event with another event. So let's say, like Jeremy was talking about, the rocket that they were launching, right? And everybody thinks it's the rocket that crashed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the launching of that rocket could have just been a cover for them using the bell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the launching, what happened, I believe it was 6 or 9 years earlier.
Well, the recovery then.
The recovery. So, yeah, it came back down out of low Earth orbit the same day as the Kecksburg incident.
That's what I meant. I should have said the recovery, not the launching. But you get what I'm saying, that they use one thing to cover for mm-hmm. another thing, right? So, and they would do that when they were developing the nuclear bomb, you know, the Manhattan Project. They would say it was one thing while they were testing nuclear bombs. That way it would kind of cover it up. And even if the information got out, they could, you know, mix the information to create some disinformation so that nobody would find out exactly what they were doing.
Right. Cool.
Man, I'm not about to say that I believe that anyone currently can do time travel, but it makes a lot of dang sense.
All right. I don't have too much left. You guys want to just kill? I got two more sections left.
Power on through.
All right.
Do it.
Well, I'm sure we'll touch back on this all during our final thoughts. During Hillary Clinton's time as a Democratic presidential candidate, she attempted to have the files on this event made public by filing a FOIA request. For those of you who aren't familiar, the Freedom of Information Act. Unfortunately, government officials refused to release anything on the subject of the Kecksburg UFO. Some reports say that the files never existed, and some others claim that they were missing. The request was officially filed by Hillary's campaign manager, John Podesta, in June of 2016. It is Podesta who was quoted saying, quote, I worked with her and filed a FOIA case on it. The files had disappeared, but it was clear there had been some investigation by the Air Force. Many people have asked, why was Hillary Clinton and John Podesta asking for the files on Kecksburg incident to be made public? Well, one common answer to this is that they did this in order to portray potential transparency as a candidate in the running for POTUS. This was a strong argument from her opponent in the election, Republican presidential candidate and eventual winner of the race, Donald Trump, who often pointed to the Democratic Party's recent history of poor transparency as a reason to vote red that year. One example of this is The famous Clinton emails, which used a non-secure and private server to run government affairs during her time as Secretary of State under President Barack Obama. Ironically, FOIA requests for these emails have been blocked on multiple occasions. Speaking of her position as a Secretary of State, another common belief for her request is that during her time in many high-ranking positions within government, she may have come across some potentially critical information regarding UFOs and their origins. She could have possibly believed that the public needs to know something that she either heard or saw, and that quote-unquote something may have been the true nature of the Keksberg object. There have been a few instances in the past of Clinton and Conway pushing... Conway? Where the hell did I... Oh. Clinton and Podesta, pushing for the release of information about UFOs and their true nature. In 2015, Clinton promised in an interview with Conway Daily Sun while campaigning in New Hampshire that she will, quote, get to the bottom of what the government knows about UFOs and aliens. She also told the Conway Daily Sun reporter, Damon Steer, that she is under the belief that the Earth has been visited by extraterrestrials, and that if elected president, she would actively investigate the rumors surrounding Area 51 and other potential hiding places of alien crafts and bodies by way of a special built task force. So, this all leaves me with a few questions. One, why do you think she may have requested this info to be made public? And two, do you think that there is any tie between her request then and the current events of files being quote-unquote released and a new task force being created for the investigation into UAPs?
He was going crazy when you were reading that.
Losing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm losing.
Now, remember, right now, so. Not political, sir.
Oh, no.
He was
all
like arms and just like...
No.
It was hilarious.
On the edge of his seat over there.
I wish I had seen it.
All right, here's where we go a little bit deep, and people might think this is crazy, but it's not. John Podesta and Hillary Clinton. Now, we could just not even... We could speculate more so on Hillary Clinton, but John Podesta, for sure, is into all kinds of weird things like spirit cooking and occult practices and things like that. And so I think that on one hand, they probably really wanted to know some stuff. Like, they wanted to know personally for them, right? They wanted to get some of the juice from this occult knowledge. Okay. On the other hand, I think that they were totally pushing this alien agenda for Project Bluebeam that I talk about all the freaking time. So they want to get as much information out and put it out into the public. We're like, look, UFOs, aliens, you know what I mean? Like, so I think it was both. They were looking for occult information for themselves, and they were also trying to push the alien narrative for us.
I agree with Jeff with the addition of during the presidential run, the reason or the information with the emails was the talk, right? Donald Trump kept saying things like, you'll be in jail when I'm president, like all kinds of stuff, because we're going to release all this information. So I agree with what Jeff's saying, but I also want to say that it was more than likely an addition as well of like, oh, here's something that people want to know about. Please get the spotlight off of me in any way I possibly can. Let's talk about the UFOs since that's hot right now.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not what the people wanted to hear. It's what they wanted the people to hear.
Right.
Right. Like, people generally don't care about the Keksberg incident, especially however long it's been afterwards. Calm down, Jeremy. But you know what I'm saying?
Care.
Like, there's plenty of other things that you could have done a FOIA request for to show transparency, and they chose that specific thing for the reason that I stated, I think.
Now, the reason why I think that it was also a deflection is because she could have put in a FOIA request for it and not told anybody about it. You know, it could have been their thing. We just want to know information about it, right? So yeah, I agree. I think that was totally a get the public focused on something specific for a specific reason, and also a deflection tactic. Which, like, you know what? Nothing came from either of those two things. So, I mean, nothing at
yet.
All.
Yet.
Know? Well, yet, we could say yet for the next 20 years. You know, yet. Still, nothing has come from either of those two
according
things.
According to sources.
How long have we been saying we're going to get the alien info next year?
Yeah, but,
right.
Yeah, but
same idea. It's all the yets.
Yep.
I know the host of another podcast, Shadow Band Podcast. I know the host. And apparently, according to him, we are on the verge of Project Bluebeam.
Yeah.
That guy sounds crazy.
I don't even think we're on the verge. I think we're in the middle of it, man. You know, like, I think it's happening like in real time. It's just not like one singular event that will happen one day. I think it's something that's taking place over time, because that's how you really seed the population with an idea. You can't just make everybody believe it. You have to do it constantly, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So that's what I think. But I have a question. Do we know when Wernher von Braun, like, what his stint was at NASA? Like, what was the end date for Wernher von Braun? I know he died in 77.
Oh, he's still there.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. Why? So where was that heading?
Okay, so like I was saying earlier, how NASA apparently had the information on whatever this object was, but they lost the data in 1987, I think I said, right? So when they, obviously when this event happened, Wernher von Braun was like the head of NASA, right? So, and he was a Nazi scientist. He was one that we got from Project Paperclip. So I'm wondering if, you know, the bell falls, right? I'm going to call it the Soviet bell, because I think it was the Soviet version. Soviet bell falls. He gets the information. He's like, oh, snap. My buddies that the Soviets took.
He retired in 72.
He retired. Okay, so he was definitely there, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's probably
so 70
thinking
to
like,
72.
He's thinking my old Nazi scientist buddies are building this thing that we were working on in Nazi Germany. They're building it for the Soviets now. So like he probably had to just shut it down, get rid of the data, you know, and just hush it all down. I bet you his hands were probably all over this.
Wouldn't doubt it. All right, I got one more section before we get into final thoughts. Y'all ready? All right, this is just simple stuff, nothing really added here. There are a plethora of different sources for more information on the story, including a documentary on the Discovery Channel titled Nazi UFO Conspiracy in 2008. It was covered by the UFO Hunters TV show on the History Channel in 2009. The History Channel also covered it in an episode of Ancient Aliens in 2011. And other videos, movies, and documentaries from the Science Channel, UFO TV, the Sci-Fi Channel, and Unsolved Mysteries, with many, many, many more that I have not mentioned. Articles have popped up in well-known magazines and journals, such as The Sky and Telescope and the Journal of Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. Countless websites, blogs, and podcasts can be found on the subject, each with their own theories as to what really happened that day. Kecksburg itself, now jokingly known as the quote-unquote Roswell of Pennsylvania, holds a festival called the Kecksburg Old Fashioned and UFO Festival Days at the end of July in remembrance of that day, and the crowds continue to grow to record numbers every year. The town has even gone as far as renaming Coon Road. It is now called Meteor Road. The town even hosts the Kecksburg UFO restaurant, and the local fire department runs the UFO store and is easily recognizable due to the large acorn-shaped craft on the property. At the store, you can find shirts, mugs, hats, stickers, books, and a decent amount of other things, and can all be found at the Volunteer Fire Department website at www.kecksburgvfd.com. VFD is Volunteer Fire Department. And that is it. That wraps up my presentation on the Kecksburg UFO incident. Let's get into final thoughts.
I'm surprised, Jeremy. I'm surprised that you were so conservative with the writing on this one. For the listeners, it was only 10 pages.
Are you following my? You are.
Oh, yeah. Shit. It wasn't 50 pages. It was 10.
only one part this time, everybody.
Yeah, look at Jeremy go. He's doing things.
Good job, Jeremy. I'm proud of you, bud.
Honestly, this is... I'll go first, okay?
It's all BS.
This is the... You know, other than Roswell, this is the American UFO story. It's as simple as that. I mean, this is your stereotypical cookie cutter, cut dry UFO story where it crash lands. All of a sudden, the military shows up and people all around the area see something. This is what all those stories are based off of, is the Kecksburg UFO incident. That's why it's so important to ufology and shows just like The Infinite Rabbit Hole. This is a staple in our Americana. I love it. I think that this is as traditional as it gets. And, you know, I love the simple things. And that's why it's not a four-part series. This is a very, very simple, simple story. I could have went on for days with witness testimony. But I cut it out and just kind of kept the key characters and, you know, didn't really include as much as I really could have, because I could have included another 40, 50 pages of just witnesses. And then people, I mean, we would have just been hearing the same thing, because every witness seemed to have had the same thing, except for those two dipshits that were in Wright Patterson. It's just beyond me how anybody takes that seriously. But my final thoughts are, something happened for sure. 100% something came out of the sky that day, landed in Kecksburg. What it was, geez. I also believe that this could be a Nazi bell. Although there is some other evidence that kind of points to other things, as in like a multi-dimensional craft, which could be a Nazi bell, because we obviously, nobody knows exactly what the technology was behind it. The Nazi bell could have been a multi-dimensional craft, as we had stated earlier. But there are some very strange things on this. I've seen pictures of what the hieroglyphs, quote unquote, symbols should have looked like or were said to have looked like, and it doesn't look like anything I've ever seen. I don't know. I'm not very familiar with symbolism and everything. I know Jeff might have a little bit more to say into that, but all I know is that, yes, something happened. Yes, something was taken out of the woods. There was tons of people that saw it, and apparently all the files are misplaced. I think it's a great story. Next. Kenzar, go.
I think it's a convenient story.
Do you?
So, yeah. It's quite convenient that everybody was just there taking care of radiation, and that Clinton was trying to get this information put out into the public. It's all just very convenient. Do I think we have an alien on our hands? Maybe not. Like an alien craft on our hands? Maybe not. I think it's, like you guys said, Nazi bell teleporting from here to there. But I think it's a very convenient story.
Hmm.
It's a good story, though.
All right. Next. Fight, gentlemen.
On.
Yeah.
To give credit to JS and this other guy. I win. To give credit to JS and this other guy seeing that otherworldly hand fall out from underneath the sheet, they would have looked pretty otherworldly, because if there was people, which I'm sure there were, but inside of that thing when it slammed into the earth, they would have looked like splattered meatloaf maybe. So yeah, it would have certainly looked otherworldly. Like, I've never seen a ground beef monster before, like, because honestly, like, this thing hitting the ground like that, being half buried inside of its own crater. I mean, that sounds like the people that were inside of it, like, I mean, it could have been drones. Who knows how long this technology has been available, right? But the people that were inside of it, if there were people inside of it, didn't look very much like people anymore. So yeah, obviously, I think that whole story, I think that the people probably saw it. It probably delivered bricks to this area and stuff, this military base. I mean, shoot, half our buildings in my NOB Norfolk were made of brick, you know? Mm-hmm. But yep. I think that that's likely, right? But then all this extra fluff was added to it. But I do like the cut and dry nature of the story, that it was very cookie cutter like, right? This is the chain of events that tend to happen with these things as far as is what is reported. I agree with Kenzar that it does sound very convenient, but I think that people might manipulate something like that to make it convenient for them, right? Like, I don't know when Hillary Clinton was born, but I think that, you know, this was just something that could be convenient for her to try to get the information of for whatever purpose she had for it, whether it was nefarious or not, right? But yeah, I like it. I like that there was very consistent reporting with the people that said, you know, this is what I saw. And then there was even a level of, you know, unfortunate, you know, other than natural death that occurred around it, because that does seem to occur with a lot of things. There's a huge rumor going around right now about some recent events that have happened that, you know, one of the victims of those events, unfortunately, may have been the second person to discover, you know, a hydrogen powered car, and the second person to have met their demise in an other than natural way. And so it's just like these sorts of things happen and happen and happen and happen and happen. And when you get an event like this, and then there's one of those tied into it, it's hard to just dismiss it and say, oh, well, you know, that was just a weird coincidence, because it's like it makes sense with the way that things roll with these sorts of events, right? Whether it's a new invention that may undermine a company that has its foothold in some country, or it's a, you know, sighting of a crazy event or something like that, there seems to always be these specific parts of it. There's some kind of murderous activity that happens in it. There's very consistent reporting. And then there's the alphabet soup that just come in there and then just snatch it all up. And you see, hear about the Men in Black and all that stuff. I don't think that has anything to do with it, because there's a lot of people that wear black suits with white shirts, right? But, right. You know, I think that, but it's an easy way to say that, you know, some government agency is trying to cover something up. The military gets involved. You know, everyone says, oh, it was a meteorite, or, oh, it was nothing, is what the government puts out. But we saw this thing being towed away in this, you know, under this massive sheet or this tarp or whatever it was. That's a whole lot of nothing on the back of that truck, right? So, oh, yeah, it's
no worries.
Very interesting circumstance.
Steve saw a VW bug that was all broken down in the woods, and he just wanted to take it home as a for memory's sake.
Yeah, yeah, it's his weekend warrior project.
Yeah,
yeah. So it was just really it hit all those points for me to not dismiss this whole thing as just, you know, nonsense, but to say that there was something there. Now, is that something UFOs and aliens and all that stuff? I don't think so. Not at all, actually. And I really don't ever give that sort of stuff like any sort of, you know, time to rattle around in my thoughts. I'm just like, well, that's ridiculous. But what do we have here? You know, things that we have here on this planet that government agencies are currently working on, you know, with all of the stuff that Jeff's told us, all the different, like, the anti-gravity spacecraft type stuff, all these patents that the U.S. government has, how long have those things been known about? You know, why would someone make a patent, or a government agency make a patent for something that was impossible, right? It's just like, if no one can ever do it, then why would you ever get a patent for it, right? So it's just like, there's a lot more to this, and it leaves a lot of questions to be answered. And I can't wait for us to really dig hardcore into this Nazi bell, because I think that a lot of those questions will find an answer, at least, or maybe lead to more, you know, but it'll be cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, I already said it. I'm pretty sure that this was a Soviet bell. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it could have been U.S. Bell. Either way, it was a Project Paperclip or the Soviet counterpart part to that program. It was those scientists building the same technology that they were already building. That's the whole reason that us and the Soviet Union took the scientists, was so that they could help them build all of the crazy shit that they were building, right? Mm-hmm. Rockets, Nazi Bell, whatever they were doing. So that's what I think this was. I definitely think that it was there and then people saw it. I have no questions about that. There's enough, you know, seems like there's enough witnesses and enough of all the things. But this was a good story because, like Jake said, it hits all the points. It's got everything. It's got the Men in Black. It's got the unidentified sighting, right? It's got the Project Paperclip. It's got the documents are missing. It's got it's just got it all. It's got the occult symbols in it. You know, it's literally all the things. This would, I'm sure there probably is a movie, but if there's not a movie, it would be a good movie.
It's a really, really old one.
Somebody needs to make a new one.
Michael Bay, tons of explosions.
Yes.
Brian Moreno. Give it to him.
Brian Moreno, that's it.
Moreno, shout out there to Brian Moreno. I'm going to hit him up and tell him, yo, you need to make this movie, dude.
Nice.
A reenactment.
Maybe we could be in it, dude. Oh, we could be in it. Oh,
that would be cool.
I want to be the guy that gets suicided.
John Murphy. Jake's already in California. It works.
I want to be John Podesta.
John Podesta.
I'll be Hillary.
I want to find out about all this occult stuff for reasons.
No. All right. So that's it, guys. Everyone good? Everything off your chest? Good to go?
Yeah.
All right. Well, for those of you listening in to the Infinite Rabbit Hole and the Paranormal Network, let us know what you think. Head on over to Facebook and search for the Infinite Rabbit Hole and click on the one with the black logo. That would be our group. And start a conversation with us. Check out the link posted for this episode and put your comments in there. Let us know, what do you think the Kexper UFO was? Or watch for the next time that Mrs. Kenzar is on Instagram Live. She's done it twice.
Go follow the TikTok. Go follow the TikTok because I want to go live on the TikToks too.
Yes. Mm. So that's been a question too. We had somebody ask us today or last night if the TikTok with our logo on it is us or if it's like a mock. Yes, that's us. I think it's just Infinite RH Pod, right? Isn't that what it is?
Yes.
Infinite RH Pod on TikTok. Follow us. Once we get enough followers on there, I think it's 1,000 followers, we're going to start going live on TikTok.
Yeah.
While you're doing that, check out Jeffrey. He goes live every day and even misses recordings for, you know, by going live.
I didn't miss a recording. I was late to a meeting.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. It was a meeting.
Didn't even know what platform we were using.
I was debating people on TikTok live, and then I get hyped. And
yeah, it was pretty heated.
Sorry.
I was there. I'll vouch for that one.
But yeah, check us out, hit us up on all of our social medias, and we'll see you next time in the next path of the Infinite Rabbit Hole. Bye
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 bye.